Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror.
Welcome back, listeners, to the Wrestle Horror Podcast, where we combine the best of wrestling and horror for your entertainment. I am Meat Hook Jim, along with my co-host, Donnie Hoover.
Hey, everybody, how's it going?
And on this episode of Wrestle Horror, I've brought in a good friend of mine. He's the voice of the Big Scary Show, which is my other podcast, and an all-around great guy and haunt enthusiast and actor. Please welcome Drew Badger to the show.
Oh, pshaw, what an intro.
Yeah, more than you deserve.
Much more.
But we wanted to talk to Drew because Drew's got a love for haunting and horror. He's got a love for wrestling, and you know, I just fit with the Wrestle Horror Podcast. So,
a match made in heaven.
Or hell, depending on how you look
at it. Or the square circle, whatever you want to say.
So, let's start with haunting, Drew. When did you know that you wanted to be a haunter?
1977, when I was volunteered to work at our school's Halloween festival, back when you could call them Halloween festivals. I was working the Tunnel of Terror, which was this lame little thing where all the little kids would crawl through a series of refrigerator boxes that the second graders had painted little pictures of monsters and ghosts and witches, and it was totally lame. The middle box in the tunnel was an upright refrigerator box, so the people could stand up if they needed to. And me and my friend got the idea that we needed to spice it up a little bit. So I sent him to the cafeteria to get a bowl of ketchup, and I took out my little pocket knife, back when you could take pocket knives to school,
right. And
cut two holes in that refrigerator box. And when he came back with the ketchup, we smeared it all over our arms. And the very next group of people that went through the Tunnel of Terror were, I believe, fifth grade girls. And when they reached that middle box, we stuck our arms through there and started screaming, and they started screaming. And within about 5 minutes, we had a line out the door waiting to get in and crawl through the tunnel. And unfortunately, a teacher was alerted to this and came and put a stop to it. But it was at that point I was like, I'm on to something here.
Teachers always want to ruin the fun.
They spoil the fun. It's terrible. So for 42 years, roughly, I have been haunting.
And I know you and I basically got our start at Cedar Fair Parks, which were Paramount Parks at the time.
At the time, yes. Fast forward to 2001, 25 years ago. You know, I had done, you know, scout haunts and church haunts and college dorm haunts and things. But in 2001, right after 9/11, when everybody was just kind of like, in the country, I went to Scarowinds down at Carowinds in Charlotte, North Carolina, and was just completely blown away by it. And I was like, I have got to work here next year. And I did, and I worked there for 7 years, and then became a professional, quote-unquote, freelance haunter. That, you know, you can hire me to come work at your professional haunted attraction. And that's also when I started my consulting business, which was basically formed because the people at Paramount, for the what we would call the first generation of Scarowinds employees, there was about six of us that kept coming back year after year. And the younger people kept asking us, well, how should I work here? How should I work this room? How should I work there? You've been here a while. What works? What doesn't work? So basically the first gen people started training, and it came very easy to me. So in 2009, I started Rabid Badger Haunt Consulting and travel all over the U.S. and Canada, teaching at seminars and conventions and conferences and at professional haunted houses.
Well, you definitely are a well-traveled trainer and actor. You know, we've discussed this many times in our personal lives. And you have been all over the country. What's your favorite part of the country to train in?
Oh, well, you know, being in the humid East Coast of the Carolinas, you know, any chance I get in August, or September to go out to the West, you know, in California or someplace like that, I am on a plane because, you know, I prefer no humidity. So living in the Carolinas is hell in August, when is really when I start doing my workshops and things like that. So, you know, I was out in Sanger, California at Hobbs Grove Haunted House or Haunted Attraction this year, spent a few days out there working with their people. And, you know, it's just so different out there. You know, everything is brown as opposed to green, and the, you know, the California lifestyle and In-N-Out Burger. And of course, you know, it's California. So, hey, it's just a cool lifestyle out there. I've worked at a couple of haunts out there. I go to Midsummer Scream every summer in Long Beach for the show, mm-hmm. and get a bunch of interviews and try to stay a week out there, or at least several days. And, you know, that's got to be my favorite part of the country as far as working out there.
Okay.
And with your consulting business, what do you think people, or what do you find that people are most asking for help-wise? Is it haunt actor training or set design? Or
I would say 80 to 85% of my work is training. Maybe 5% is recruiting and retaining actors. I also have a voice company called Spooky Voices. You know, I'm not saying I get Dick Terhune's cast-offs, but I do, because he's market exclusive, and I'll whore myself out to anybody that wants to pay me a few bucks to do a commercial for him. But, you know, so, you know, maybe the rest of it, 8 to 9% is probably voice work, and then maybe 1 to 2% is actually set design and building. I don't know a lot about it, but I know people that do. So, you know, that's what consultants do. If they don't know how to do it, they know people that do.
Right.
You know, I was at a haunt in Rye, New York this year, first year haunt, and it was a Leonard Pickle designed haunted attraction, and he was out there helping to assemble it with his team. And my flight was delayed from 6 a.m. until 7 p.m., so I spent the better part of a Sunday afternoon, 2 weeks before opening, installing wall panels with Leonard Pickle and the owner of the haunt. So
nice.
That was kind of fun.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fun for me. That's kind of like my thing I like to do. I like to be a build stuff. So I'd have been in heaven there.
It's fun. You know, you're real sore afterwards, but, you know, that's that hard work thing that, you know, right. So much of us don't do enough of these days.
Yeah, but you were doing it with the Godfather.
Of right? course. You know, anytime you get a chance to work with Leonard and glean a little knowledge off that guy, it's always a good thing.
Absolutely. So, we've established that you do actor training, and as I well know, your reputation precedes you.
I have a reputation. Wow.
It's not that great, but
no, I didn't think so.
Obviously it is, because you get to travel around the country training people. So they must know who Badger is somehow.
You're so jealous.
Not really. I'll admit I used to be, but not so much anymore.
Yeah. You've got bigger and better things to do now.
Yeah. I got things that I'm working on. And, but anyway, when you act, I know you and I, I had the honor of acting with you and Tater.
Oh God, yes.
And as well as Lady of Darkness, Chris, at Netherworld, which is
2013, I believe.
Yeah, it's like Netherworld is the mecca for haunt actors. They all want to work Netherworld.
I was just there on Saturday.
And, you know, we had such a great time working those queue lines. I forgot that at the time I was in my mid-40s. I felt like I was in my 20s, and I ran like I was in my 20s until the next day when I woke up and went, I'm still in my 40s. So, but that time I'll never forget. We got some great tag team scares. And,
oh, yes.
And you're so fluid, and you read people well, so when you get people like yourself and myself together, we don't have to say a word, and we know what we're going to do.
Oh, of course. You know, you read signals. You just kind of look at somebody and kind of glance over and roll your eyes at, like, yeah, that's the one we're going after. And boom, there it goes. Works out very well. And, you know, you should come down again. You know, Ben has, you know, I even asked Ben point blank this weekend at Legendary Haunt Tour. I said, Ben, are you taking guest actors at your new location in Stone Mountain. And he was like, yes. So, woohoo. Next year, I will do what I can to get out there for a weekend and go play in his, no longer in his parking lot, but in his Midway area,
ooh,
which is very nice.
I may have to dust off a costume or two and do that road myself. Trip. Yes. Road trip.
Pictures up on the Big Scary Show Facebook page. Facebook.com/Big Scary Show.
Shameless plugs. We'll get to those at the end.
I'm all about shamelessness.
Yes. Speaking of the Big Scary Show, for those people that may, you know, the people that are listening to the Wrestle Horror that don't know about us, you know, we've got quite a history. We've done nothing but grow over the past 7 years.
And not just our waistlines.
Right. But if anybody tunes into the show regularly, you are, whether you like to admit or not, the voice of the show.
I hate it. I want you guys to step up your game. I'm tired of being a voice.
You've been saying that for 7 years.
I know. And look who hasn't stepped up yet. No, seriously, it's fun. It's enjoyable. I don't mind being the voice of the show. I mean, that's kind of how we actually started it out, saying, well, Drew, you be the voice of the show, and Jim, you be the production guy, and Storm, you be the marketer, and Jerry, well, we like Jerry. So, you know, no, he's our great music guy. But, you know, I'm lucky that I have the opportunity to, with the course of my 9-to-5-er, to take time off and go do a convention and get a ton of interviews of people. And you know, you and I got our start kind of in the, you know, even earlier back in the mid-2000s with another unnamed podcast, which we will not mention here or need to. No. But you know, in fact, all four guys from the show got our start with that podcast, and I got that start by interviewing musicians. I started doing music interviews with horror bands like Psycho Charger and Pine Box Boys and folks like that, and it was just a very easy thing because I've been a musician for 35 plus years. It was just so easy for me to talk music with these people. You know, we talked a lot about, you know, what influenced you, what made you a scary musician as opposed to just a rock or whatever musician. And I found that the interviews came very, very easy. And so I started going to other shows and started talking to, you know, celebrities, for lack of a better word, anybody that would talk to us. And then when this new show came along, we just kind of all said, well, you know, if we get the opportunity to go and interview, you know, Kane Hodder or Sid Haig or, you know, Lita Ford or Bruce Campbell, then, you know, do it. And, you know, it turns out I'm able to do that traveling a lot more, even though there seems to be more and more conventions out there, you know. Right. And, you know, you've had great interviews on the show. Jerry has had great interviews on the show. Storm has had great interviews on the show. You know, even Veister's had interviews on the show as a special correspondent. And we used to have another correspondent that was with us at the beginning, but he's kind of semi-retired on hiatus someplace and all that. But, you know, that's kind of what got this whole podcast started.
It is. And, you know, we've got quite the laundry list of celebrities that have been on the show in the past 7 years.
Oh, yes.
I mean, you just touched on the surface of people that we've spoken with, horror celebrity-wise. The list is quite extensive. And another shameless plug for Big Scary Show, if you want to know who they are, go to our website, check our archives.
Absolutely. And not all of them are horror related. I mean, you know, right. I had a 30-minute sit down with David Prowse, and, you know, you've met him at shows, but I met him at a show. I was actually a chauffeur for him at a convention I was volunteering at. And he said, sure, I'll sit down with you and talk to you. So I got to sit down with Darth Vader for 30 minutes and just learned a whole lot more than I ever thought I would know about the man. And, you know, we've had Malcolm McDowell on the show. We've had Josh Gates. We've had lots of what we wouldn't consider horror people. And being that this is Wrestle Horror, we've had a lot of wrestlers on the show too.
We have.
You know, we've talked to the Nasty Boys, and we've talked to Ron Simmons, and we've talked to a lot of indie guys and stuff like that. You know, it's a lot of fun to see them. You know, horror and wrestling, I'm sure you've mentioned 100 times or thousands of times on your show, you know, the audiences are fairly similar. They run in the same circles. You know, if you're a wrestling fan, you probably like horror movies. And if you like horror movies, you're probably watching the pay-per-views and the Monday Night Wars back 20 years ago and all that good stuff.
Well, absolutely. That's why, you know, when you go to these horror conventions, you invariably, they have at least a couple of wrestlers.
And it always astonishes me that people are like, how come you have wrestlers at a horror convention?
Well, those people are grouped in the same group of people that don't know who David Prowse is without us telling them.
Probably. I mean, was it you that was at Horror Hound in Cincinnati? Like one of the first years we were on the show. It might have been you. It might have been Wendy. But there, you were standing there and there was these two girls waiting in line to speak to somebody from The Walking Dead. Probably Daryl, because he's a cute one, apparently.
Right.
And overheard the girl saying, I don't know who this John Carpenter is. Who is he? I'm just in line to see Daryl.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy crap. You know, smack some of these people, please.
For me. Yeah, because I got a picture with John Carpenter shortly after that.
Yeah, I think that was the Horror Hound Cincinnati show you attended, like in 13 or so, back at the height of The Walking Dead. But yeah, you know, why wouldn't you have wrestlers? Why wouldn't you have metal guys? Why wouldn't you have, you know, hard rock guys at a show? Because all three of those genres kind of blend together. I mean, you can't have, you know, theater and not have wrestling, because wrestling is theater.
Right.
And, you know, it's just a natural, it's like peanut butter and chocolate. Hey, you know.
Well, a prime example of mixing the two is The Undertaker.
Of course. Or Kane, who has actually done horror movies. Glenn yes. Jacobs, who's now the mayor of Knoxville, Tennessee, of all things.
Mankind.
Yeah, Mankind.
Yeah, Mankind.
Yeah. He met him at a show. We actually have had him on the Big Scary Show. I met him at a meet and greet years ago before this show was involved, and he was just the nicest guy, and I never forgot how cool he was talking stories. And I met him at a convention maybe a year and a half ago, and Jim, you probably know the name Rich Hampf.
Yeah,
he was telling a story about going through one of his shows up in Long Island a few years ago with his kids, and people were like, no, that is not Mick Foley going through a haunted house. And he was like, you know, yes, it is. So, you know, go find our archives with Mick Foley on that one. It was great. We had and it always astonishes me that, you know, why you don't have more professional wrestlers as the killers in movies. They're already big. They're already strong. They already have, you know, stunt abilities to take a punch and to take a fall and to, you know, they know how to memorize lines. If they need to have lines,
why wouldn't it be? Some of them have some acting chops. I mean,
sure. You got to have acting chops these days.
Yeah, that's actually one of my bucket list things is I'm a big Jason fan, and I want to one day do a horror character, be like the serial killer in a horror movie. And like you said, you know, I have the ability to take all the falls and the flips and the flops and all that, and I just think it'd be a blast.
Well, if you know anybody that does indie movies or calls themselves an amateur filmmaker, the easiest films in the world to make are horror movies. Mm-hmm. You get a gallon of blood, you get a pretty girl, you get a fake knife, bing, you've got a horror movie. And, you know, hey, that's how Spielberg got his start. You know, and, you know, just say, hey, let's make a horror movie and I'll be the bad guy and I'll, you know, go flying through a window or off a cliff or something like that. And, if you know, do it safely. But, you know, big, strong guys who can take a punch and do stuff like that, natural killers in horror movies.
Mm-hmm. Well, Donnie, let me ask you this. Have you ever met Kane Hodder?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I got a choke pick with him.
I told you
that story where I wasn't expecting it.
I've got one, too.
Me, too. Yeah,
I didn't realize he really choked you. I was telling him.
Oh, yes.
I just bent down and kind of was like, hey, could I have a choke pick? And he was just like, yeah, sure. And before I could even say anything else, I was like, ah. And he was like literally choking the crap out of me.
He doesn't hold back.
Yeah, you got to take a deep breath before you get a picture with him.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even get a chance to do that.
Jeez!
Yeah, but a question for both of you guys. Speaking of like all the celebrities you guys have interviewed, at the Big Scary Show, is, you know, obviously if you're in the haunt industry or anything like that, you've heard of the Big Scary Show.
Hopefully.
What do you think is the easiest way to approach a celebrity or approach somebody to get your interviews? Because like you guys mentioned, you guys have gotten tons and tons of interviews and short clips, just, you know, plugging the Big Scary Show from people. And like, how do you guys approach that to where they actually give you the time of day and talk to you guys?
Well, go ahead, Drew. I'll let you answer this.
I was going to let you. The easiest way that I have found is to walk up to them and say, hi, my name is, I'm with this show, hand them a card and say, we're doing interviews this weekend. If you're available, would you be able to spare a few minutes? If they have their quote unquote people at the table, even if they're sitting right next to the guy, I always go to their person. I say, hi, my name is, I hand them a card with the show. So I'm with the Big Scary Show. We're a horror industry, haunted house, and Halloween industry podcast, and we're out here conducting some interviews and would like to know if celebrity XYZ is A, doing interviews this weekend, and B, if they would be available for, you know, 5 minutes of their time. And most of the time, not always, most of the time they'll say, come back Sunday. That's our slow day. Sometimes they're like, we're not doing interviews, and you say thank you very much for your time and you walk away. And sometimes they'll be like, yeah, when's a good time? And if there's nobody at their table, I'm like, oh, I'm standing right here, let's talk. And
let's do it.
and usually we'll talk for, you know, a few minutes, and then if two or three people start coming to the table, I'll say, well, let me wrap this up because you have people at the table. You're here to make money, but you're also here to meet people. So don't ever be afraid to approach somebody at a convention. I mean, if you're a shy person and there's Kane Hodder looking all mean and scary and everything, he's really a very nice person, just don't let him choke you to death. But he's a very nice person, and he's there to meet his fans, and he'll appear at the same convention every single year and always have a line, because A, he's always got some project in the work, and B, he loves meeting his fans. Now, there are celebrities out there, and I will not mention their names,
sure,
who just, you know, you can tell they are there simply to make money. It seems like it's a huge inconvenience for them to be there, and they have that, oh, I wish I was anywhere but here, but I need to charge $40 an autograph because I haven't had a film career in a few years, and, you know, this is how I make my money. You would be surprised at how many incredibly famous celebrities right now, their main source of income is the convention circuit. You know, again, I won't mention any names, and the majority of those people love doing it. They're just happy. They love meeting fans, meet and greets, photo ops, whatever, and merchandising. But they, you know, a lot of them are older. They don't get the parts that they used to, or they can't perform like they used to because, you know, they're in their 60s or 70s, and they need somebody younger or CGI or whatever can do what they used to do. So they just come out and talk to people and sign autographs. They sell, you know, they sell their autograph. They do not sell photos, because then there's tax laws and things like that, but you can always charge for your autograph because that is truly yours and not subject to taxable income. So, you know, there's, you know,
I never thought of that, actually.
I hope no IRS people are listening to that. but that is absolutely true. And if you hear me talk to a lot of celebrities, I'll say, I see you're out here selling autographs and posing for pictures and things like that. Yes, they're not selling. They'll give you a free photo, but you have to purchase the autograph.
Right.
Which is, you know, perfectly legal in pretty much every state that I know of. And again, a lot of people, that's their sole source of income or their main source of income nowadays. But don't be afraid to approach the folks at these tables, whether it's the 17th person to die in the movie which is the fourth sequel of this big name franchise, and you've never really heard of the guy, but hey, it's a valuable addition to your collection, or it's the headliner and has been a headliner for 20 years. They're there to meet people.
Right. I'll tell you, one of the celebrities that Drew and I have spoken to on numerous occasions and just loves meeting people, but when you look at him, he's scary as hell. R.A. Mihailov.
Oh, yeah.
He is just very genuinely a nice guy.
Well, he was a pro wrestler, too.
He was.
Oh, yeah, back up in Pennsylvania back in the day. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh territory.
Yeah. He's a scary-looking individual, but, you know, he'll sit there and BS with me and Drew whenever he sees us.
Yeah.
And he played Leatherface in, what was it?
Three,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he makes appearances at haunted houses. There's one up in the mountains of North Carolina that he visits every single year and does meet and greets with fans one weekend. You know, and that's where a lot of celebrities are doing that, too. They're going to haunted attractions and, hey, come meet Butch Patrick or come meet R.A. Mihailov or come meet, you know, these people who are on The Walking Dead. That's a new thing that's just kind of started up in the last few years as far as meeting folks, so. It's kind of interesting that a lot of these people do that. And, you know, it's their demographic. I don't know why they wouldn't.
Right. So. Right. Well, Tom, one of the weirdest ones that I interviewed was, what's his name? From Jeepers Creepers, Jonathan.
Breck.
Yeah, Jonathan Breck.
Is it Breck or Brecker? I think it's Breck.
It's Breck. Very nice guy, and you know, he plays the creeper, and he's actually not a bad looking guy outside of makeup.
Very handsome man.
But I got a picture with him, and he's sniffing me like the creeper would. And it was unnerving for a second, to be honest with you. But he was just having fun. I mean, they're people just like you and I. I mean, they like to have fun. And if it's at somebody else's expense without being, you know, overly rude, why not?
What's funny is some of them will do an interview with you in character if you right. want to. Some of them have asked, do you want me to be in character or do you want me to be myself? And I see more of that with the wrestlers than I do the actual horror people.
Right.
You know, I've had wrestlers do a complete shoot on the show, and on the interview, and I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. So, you know. Mm-hmm. There you go. Have fun with it.
Oh, yeah. When I interviewed Demon Bunny, they stayed kind of kayfabe. Not entirely, but they kind of stayed in the Rosemary and Allie characters throughout the entire interview.
Yeah, Aaron, that was a great interview. And for those who don't know it, go check it out on our archives.
Yeah. It was in March of 2017.
And you had tried for a long time to set that up.
It took me several months to get that squared away. But it was good. And it was an hour long, which really surprised me. And I got so many messages via Twitter from fans that were just saying, thank you so much for this. And, you know, that we learned some stuff about them that we didn't know. And it was one of our highest rated shows. It was one of the most downloaded shows we've had.
Which should tell you about our audience being wrestling fans.
Exactly.
Or you would hope so.
Yeah. You would hope so.
So is there somebody that is on your bucket list to interview either for our show or this show in the wrestling world? I mean, obviously everybody wants to talk to somebody like a Ric Flair or Ricky Steamboat or somebody like that. You know, I go back to the old Mid-Atlantic WCW days and being in the Charlotte and the Carolina territories and home of Crockett Promotions and all the old cool stuff like that. They, you know, I see them in the dang grocery stores down here every now and then. And they all own gyms down here and fast food restaurants and car washes and stuff. And, you know, they have the Legends convention down here. You know, you can't go a day or two without bumping into some ex-wrestler from the 70s or 80s. But I've never really sat down and tried to interview any of them because, A, you know, I don't see them in, you know, horror movie type stuff.
Right.
Although I wish they would, but you know, is there somebody that the two of you would just love to have as a bucket list? And if I get down to one of these conventions, maybe I can pass a card along or something.
Donnie?
Well, yeah, for me, living, I would say AA, Arn Anderson. I was a big Four Horsemen guy growing up, and I guess he's done, since he left WWE, he's done a couple seminars, and everybody's had nothing but good things to say about his seminars, saying he's just a bank of knowledge.
I met him at a book signing when he did his book. Mm-hmm. And his book is a complete, you know, it's a complete shoot.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he was in character the whole time. But, you know, very, like you said, very, very nice guy. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of in the dying days of WCW.
Yeah.
I think the book came out like 97, 98, somewhere in that area.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going to a steakhouse, and he was doing a book signing at a steakhouse in Charlotte. And we sat around and had dinner and waited for like 2 hours for him to show up. And he was there, and we chatted for maybe 2 or 3 minutes. Again, nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
Bought a copy of his book, and it's a very interesting book. If you ever get a chance to get his, I don't know if he's written them more, but if you know, get a chance to pick up a copy of his book wherever.
Oh yeah,
it's a very interesting look at the 70s and 80s territory scene, especially in the South, the Georgia territories, Carolina territories, Texas, all that cool stuff.
You guys need to read a book called Death of the Territories.
Mm-hmm. That was the one you were just reading, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with this.
It's Death of the Territories. It's a very good book, and it goes back into the territory's formative days all the way up through when Vince McMahon started buying things up and up into the Monday Night War and the demise of WCW. Right now I'm reading a book called The Death of WCW.
Yes, that book I know of.
The book is called Death of the Territories.
Who wrote it? Was it a wrestler or a promoter, somebody in the business, or was it just somebody that interviewed a bunch of folks?
No, it was somebody that had a lot of knowledge about what was going on. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but I mean, he did his research because he had Sam Muchnick in there.
Oh yes,
and Tim Hornbaker.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Not familiar.
That's him.
Interesting.
Yeah, give it a read. It's kind of eye opening in certain respects. It delves back deep into the other side that marks don't usually get to see.
Right. Fascinating. I was, you know, I've been in radio off and on since 1993, and one of the first stations I worked at, the general manager of the station in the Raleigh area was the old ring announcer for Dorton Arena for Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling back in the 70s.
Right.
And 8:05 bell time every Tuesday. And, you know, he had stories about Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes and Greg Valentine and Baron Von Raschke and, you know, Pedro Morales and, oh my God, Manny Fernandez, Wahoo McDaniel. Oh my God. You know, we just sit in the studio, and he did a morning show with the head guy that actually owned the station, who was a real piece of work, no names. But they would sit there and argue about politics for a while. And then when the station owner would go back into his office, this guy would do another hour on the show, and there was invariably all the wrestling fans would call in and say, do you remember this match when this happened and blah, 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 and all that? Do you remember what happened on that date? And when, you know, when the plane crashed and Johnny Valentine was injured and Flair broke his back, and he's like, oh yeah, let me tell you the story about what happened after that. And he'd go on this huge litany, and it was fantastic. Begged him to write a book about it, and he never wrote a book. And he passed away, I think, in 2001. And he was only like in his 50s when he died, which is a shame. But because he was a young guy when he was a ring announcing.
Right.
But man, the stories he had were just incredible. Best one I remember is there was an event It was Flair versus Rhodes, and they were feuding at the time. And after the show at Dorton Arena, they went out to the Long Branch Saloon in Raleigh, which is a legendary old country bar down there. I don't think it's around anymore. And Rick and Dusty were just sitting there having a beer. You know, they were in civilian clothes, and, you know, Rick looked like Rick, Dusty looked like Dusty, and this drunk redneck guy walks up and was like, "Hey, you guys supposed to be feuding. What the hell?" And then it almost like dawned on this guy, "Wrestling ain't real, is it?" Dusty Rhodes, all 300 and some odd pounds of him, stood up, got right in this guy's face, took the guy's beer bottle out of his hand and says, "Does this look fake to you?" And smashed it over his own head. And blood started pouring out of his forehead and everything, because he's had paper-thin tissue for a forehead at this time anyway. Mm-hmm. And the guy was like, "Well, damn, I guess it's real after all. Let me buy you guys a beer." And the rest of the night, they just sat there and drank all night. And, you know, just little stories like that. I'm sure that happened a million times with these guys. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
Well, you know, I've got a story to share with you. Bugsy McGraw. Do you remember Bugsy McGraw?
Yep.
Hmm?
Drew?
Heard the name. I'm not sure I know who that is, though.
He was mainly on the Florida circuit.
Okay.
Bugsy McGraw, he was one of those crazy type characters. He got carried away. I watched him stomp on Lord Alfred Hayes' fingers several times at the local auditorium. And he acted a little bit crazy. You know, he was balding and built kind of like Mankind, Mick Foley, I should say. And he just played a crazy character, but he was usually a face. And one night we were at the monthly matches at the Melbourne Auditorium in Florida. And me and my best friend Rick, we followed Bugsy after he left the arena. And he drove down to the local ABC liquor store. So we followed him. We followed him over to the liquor store, and we sat out there and waited for him to come out. We were going to meet Bugsy McGraw, you know. And yeah, bless his heart, he broke kayfabe entirely with us. He had 2 degrees. Very well-spoken gentleman. And here I was at 16 or 17 years old, sitting out in the liquor store parking lot, which was illegal because we were all, three of us, we were drinking a beer with Bugsy McGraw right there. But the most eloquent man, Drew, it was like hearing something, like hearing you talk when you're doing something, you're doing a read or something. It's just so eloquent that I couldn't believe that he was this crazy lunatic in the ring.
Yeah, the crazy lunatic bad guys are usually the nicest guys in real life.
Yeah, and he was. And he took the time, in spite of kayfabe, to talk to a couple of fans.
I have got to just wonder how some of those guys that had like the crazy hair, like Hawk and Animal and the Missing Link and those guys, I was like, what do those guys do when they're not wrestling? And they're like working, you know, and they still have that hair. I mean, are they wearing wigs? Are they just dealing with stuff? I mean, you know, you ever think anybody makes fun of them? "Hey man, what's the deal with your hair?" You know?
They're big enough to where I don't think anybody's going to.
Probably, but yeah. You know, it is something you think about at some point. You know, I'm not getting caught dead with, you know, Ricky Morton's 80s mullet these days, but he still has it. And, you know, sure, Ricky Morton could kick my butt 8 ways to Sunday right now if I said anything, but, you know.
Did you see what Ricky Morton did on AEW's pay-per-view?
I have not yet seen a show.
Ricky Morton did a Canadian Destroyer on one of the heels during the AEW pay-per-view.
Really?
Yeah. And we know how old Ricky is.
He's in his 60s.
Yeah, and he did this Canadian Destroyer like it was nothing.
Well, he's only been doing it for 40 years. He's probably very good at it, but still, wow.
Yeah.
That's something to, you know, Last time I saw him at the county fair a couple of years ago, I didn't see him do that, so.
Mm-hmm. And him and Robert Gibson there.
Robert's still wrestling? I did not know that. I thought he had some medical issue and.
Oh, no, they weren't wrestling.
Oh, okay.
Ricky happened to get involved in the match. But Robert was there as well. I don't think Robert got involved. I haven't seen the whole pay-per-view. I just saw a clip.
Mm-hmm.
But I was shocked to see him do a destroyer like that at his age.
Fascinating.
Because that's a pretty ballsy move.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, these guys are still wrestling. Some of these guys still got families to feed and bills to pay. And,
right.
You know, we see some of them up here that, you know, segueing. Arn Anderson's also been hanging out with AEW.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
As well as Tully Blanchard, two of the Four Horsemen.
I've been hearing good things about the promotion. I have yet to see one of them. So
you can watch a couple of them on Bleacher Report Live. They're free.
Mm-hmm.
Fighter Fest is one of them. I suggest you check it out.
Okay, that I shall.
And speaking of Tully Blanchard, that was a good segue. History is going to be made in January on Impact Wrestling's first pay-per-view of the year, Hard to Kill. Tully's daughter, who's a third-generation wrestler, Tessa Blanchard, is challenging for the Impact World title with Sami Callihan.
Nice.
This is the first time a woman has challenged for a major world title.
Interesting.
But, you know, if you watch Impact at all, woman's got balls bigger than most men. I mean, she doesn't care.
She's a chip off the old block, that's for sure.
She is, definitely. When I saw that she was going to challenge for the world title, I'm sitting there hoping she wins it. I mean,
right.
I'm not going to say she is, but Sami Callihan's nobody to, you know, turn your nose up at.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, hell, my daughter is being trained by the same guy that trained Sammy. So, Cody Hawk.
How is she doing?
She's doing good. She forgot her ankle brace today. And she called me right before we started this going, can you bring me my ankle brace? I said, I'm getting ready to do a recording. You should have remembered that. I asked you when I took you if you had everything.
You have learned a valuable lesson tonight.
Yes.
And you can't walk tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, so good. She's doing all right. Cody's tough. He's a hard ass. And, well, you've got to be. I mean, look at some of the people he's trained. He's trained world champions. So, you know, Shelby has a problem with a smart mouth, and it's gotten her in trouble. And when she smarts off to Cody, she gets the punishment. The punishment's 100 Hindi squats.
Mm.
That sounds bad. That starts to hurt after a while.
She'll learn.
She's learning. She's got that sass, and every time she breaks it out. But Cody also challenged her when she first signed up for the class. He says, don't you quit on me. And she says, I don't know the word quit.
And oh, good for her.
When she came home and told me that, I said, well, don't you quit on him or you're going to pay me back for the wrestling school.
Darn right. And that would only be fair.
Right.
So,
but she's hell-bent on seeing it to the end, and she wants to be out there in the ring, and I can't wait to see her wrestle her first match.
Excellent. You have a timetable for that?
She doesn't get done with school until April, And I guess it's beyond, you know, it'll be up to the promotion as to how they're going to use her. And I know, I'm pretty sure that once she's got enough experience under belt, Donnie would give her a shot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'm always open.
So it's, I expect within the next year she'll have her first match.
Nice. And I'm sure you will be mentioning that extensively on this very podcast.
I'm going to be
everywhere, not just here.
I'm going to be the proud daddy on that one because I'm getting to live vicariously through her. She's doing what I wanted to do 30 years ago.
Mm. Even if she's a jobber for a couple of years.
You know, even jobbers. You
gotta pay your dues, man.
Even jobbers get paid.
Yeah, that's true. Gotta love it.
Yeah, you know, if she's a jobber, she's a jobber. You know, I just want to see her out there wrestling.
Yeah, jobbers are a very important position in wrestling. People don't realize that. They just say, oh, they lose all the time, they suck. And it's like, no, a jobber is, like, crucial to building characters and building a promotion.
And in some cases, the jobbers are better than the stars.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They make the stars look better.
Yep.
You have to. And that's hard to do with some of them.
Mm-hmm.
If the jobber has to carry the match, you probably are either past your time or shouldn't be doing this anymore.
Right.
So let me ask you a question, Drew. Your favorite wrestler of all time?
You know, the sad thing is it's probably no one anyone really remembers. I used to really like a guy named Lash LaRue.
I remember him.
He was a redheaded dude from Louisiana,
yep.
Supposedly. I assume he was. And he was in WCW. He was a jobber to the stars, and eventually made it up like mid-card level. I don't know why I liked him. I thought he had a lot of good potential, and, you know, the death of WCW just kind of killed his career. He never went anywhere else as far as I know.
Right.
But I always thought he was just one of those guys that I kind of caught at some event. I don't even know if it was a TV taping or something. It might have even been like a Saturday morning show. And he actually won his match because it was up against, you know, Bob Smith or whatever.
Right.
And I thought, yeah, I kind of like this guy. And I just started following his career. Okay. And, you know, even though it was only like maybe 4 or 5 years long, I really enjoyed his career. And I really liked the potential. As far as old school guys, man, I loved Ronnie Garvin.
Okay. Hands
man
of
with
stone.
The hands of stone. Yep. You know, the feuds he had with Greg Valentine. The first time and the only time I ever shed a tear over a match was when he lost a retirement match to Greg Valentine, and he came back as a ref, which I was like, yes, thank God. That was probably, what, like maybe 87, 88?
Oh, yeah, it was in the late 80s.
Yeah, it was late 80s, you know, when it was still kind of shticky. But, yeah, when he made that heel turn with, I think, Skandar Akbar, I can't remember, it might have been General Adnan, and they were out to get Ric Flair, that was the thing. Mm-hmm. But and I also liked first generation Sting when he was Surfer Dude Sting. He was just fun to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, Crow Sting got a little bit too moody for me, but I still liked watching his work. But when he was Surfer Sting, yeah, because I was still young enough to where it was like that was real to me, and just liked watching that.
Yeah, right here, I'm right there with you, man, and I got to meet him. So
yeah, that's right, recently.
Yeah,
so
about a year ago.
Never met the man.
Him
wrestle a few times. Never met him.
He was cordial and. I told him I'd been a fan since he started with Jim Hellwig. He goes, that was 1985, you know. And I said,
is that the Blade Runners?
Yes.
Oh.
But there's some great.
Rock and Sting. Good gracious.
But, you know, you brought up some great memories from back in the day. I've been watching wrestling since I was 12. So, you know, all those were real. It's a nice trip down memory lane. But as you're so fond of saying on the Big Scary Show, looking at the clock on the wall, time is winding down. So before
that 60-minute time limit's coming up fast.
Right. It is. So
I got a quick question, though. I want to flip the script. You asked him what his favorite wrestler was. I want to know what his favorite horror movie or horror character is.
Well, there you go.
You're going to hate me for this. I don't watch horror movies.
What?
Nope. Don't watch them.
He's never watched The Lost Boys.
Nope.
Oh, really?
That's true.
Well, see, I never knew that. I wouldn't imagine that in a million years.
I if I had to name somebody, I would say Godzilla, because I've watched pretty much all the Godzilla movies from the old 70s Godzilla movies, you know, the versus Megalon and, you know, Mecha Godzilla and the slime monster and that kind of stuff. I haven't watched any of the new stuff since that, 95, 96 remake. I haven't watched anything after that, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if that qualifies as a horror character. I mean, I love the old Universal films. I love the old Hammer films, but I have never watched a horror film. I've never watched in its entirety. I've watched pieces and bits of The Exorcist and Jaws and, you know, bits and pieces of. My kids watch this. I think it's called the Dead Meat Podcast, where they have all the kills in these horror movies, but they don't have anything else. They just show the person dying and how they died and when they died in the movie. And my kids watch that. So I kind of sort of watch over their shoulders, because they are a little, you know, two of them are under 17, but they don't seem to be affected by it.
Right.
But I got to meet those hosts at a convention this past summer, and they're nice people. Nice. And, you know, they were like, yeah, this is just something, you know, a lot of people just want to see a bunch of teenagers get killed. So that's why we started the podcast. And I was like, oh, you're the man.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm just not a big fan. I just really don't watch movies in general. You know, nothing there. I just can't find myself sitting still for 2 hours doing that.
Right.
You know, I'll watch Star Wars whenever that comes out, and that'll probably be the only movie I'll watch this year. I haven't seen a single movie this year. So, you know, it's what it is.
I got Darby to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I did, Drew?
No.
Watch.
Yes.
That's on Reddit.
Okay.
It popped up in my feed.
Oh, fantastic. Don't let Chris see that. Yeah. Or she might admire it. I don't know.
That's more likely.
Thank goodness you don't have video.
So before we go,
I never knew you were into German scat stuff, but hey, you're gonna miss something every day.
Before we go, we're going to let you plug everything you want to plug, Drew. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm glad you asked. German scat. Jeez. First of all, let's plug the Big Scary Show. That's the podcast that you and I work on together. BigScaryShow.com, Facebook.com/BigScaryShow, Twitter at The Big Scary Show, Instagram, if we can ever figure out what that's for, at Big Scary Show. My haunt consulting business, if you are a haunted house owner and you need a workshop for your actors, it's rabbitbadger.org, rabbitbadger.org. And as of today, I have just been made an admin for Haunt Show Connect, which is a Facebook group. Kelly Allen is, you know, given all the stuff that Kelly Allen has gone through lately, and Jim and I both know him, and, you know, we won't get into that, but he's, you know, he's dumping a lot of his projects, let's just say, and that's one. So I am now the admin for Haunt Show Connect. However, I'm in Facebook jail until December 3rd, so I can't even post to it, even though I'm the admin. So I got to go argue with Facebook about that for a little bit.
Yeah.
But Haunt Show Connect, look at it. It's basically about haunted house and horror conventions, and hopefully I'll be able to post some stuff. If not, when I get back to being able to post, I'm going to start posting a slew of stuff about HauntCon and Days of the Dead and Horror Hound and all that good stuff, Transworld, Midwest, all the fantastic haunted house conventions that everybody out there who likes haunted houses should go attend.
So should I ask what you posted on Facebook to get thrown in jail?
I posted that we had a new show.
Oh, nice.
Unfortunately, I'm a member of like 150 Halloween and haunted house and horror related groups. And apparently, as of this week, you can't post to 150 Halloween or horror groups lest you be called a spammer. So I'm apparently now a spammer.
Oh,
and
nice.
They have put me in Facebook jail. So what do you do? Nothing I can do about it.
Deal with the Facebook cops.
That's what you got to do, man. I'll just have to post to less of them and probably spread it all out.
Mm-hmm.
So probably somebody got pissed and reported me. I don't know. So what are you going to do?
That's probably some guy's other podcast.
And if we find out who you are, we'll sick meat hook Jim on you. Or even better, Kinks.
Oh, Kinks would have fun.
I'm sure something, whatever it would.
What about Princess Trainwreck?
How about those as a tag team?
Kinks and Princess Trainwreck. Yes.
Oh, God. We won't get into that. Yes. Don't ever look up Princess Trainwreck on Facebook. Anybody
right
listening
now.
Out there, just don't eat dinner and then go look for Princess Trainwreck on Facebook. Not a good idea.
We would win right off the cuff because they wouldn't get in the ring.
Nobody would get in the ring. That's true. Especially if it was a bra and panties match. And on that note.
Drew, thanks so much for being a guest here on Wrestle Horror.
Enjoyed it. Anytime.
Making us laugh. It was a lot of fun, and we covered a lot. And, obviously I'll be talking to you really soon, probably tomorrow. But,
could be.
It's been fun, and the show should air on Monday, Donnie?
Yeah, it'd be this Monday or next Monday.
Okay. One of the next two Mondays. I'll let you know when the show. Oh, I can't talk all of a sudden. I'll let you do all the talking.
He's got you thinking about that tag team. Got you all messed up.
Yeah, I know. That's what scares me. But Drew, thanks again for sharing some stories and just helping Wrestle Horror keep promoting itself the way it is.
A lot of fun. Thank you.
And with that, I am Meat Hook Jim, who can't talk. Along with Donnie Hoover. Thanks again to Drew Badger, and we are out.
That's my catch line. Thief.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets. Facebook.com/WrestleHorror. Instagram @WrestleHorror. Twitter @WrestleHorror. On our YouTube channel, the Wrestle Horror Channel. Also, you can find us at www.wrestlehorror.com.